Welcome to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs, here to talk about another win against the New England Patriots. Chiefs now 4-3 under Andy Reid against Bill Belichick and the Patriots. Nick Jacobs, do you ever get tired of the Chiefs beating the Patriots, even if Tom Brady's not there?
You can't see on video, I'm sipping on the OJ just like Bill Belichick at that owner's meeting. No, you never get tired of beating the Patriots. You never get tired of getting the best of Bill Belichick. You prefer if it's in the playoffs, but it'll take what you can get. And, I mean, look at what Andy Reid's been doing against Bill Belichick for the most part. He's, what, won 3 or 4 of the last 5 probably. If I'm good at numbers, because they won in 2017, then they lost the 2 in 2018, 1 in 2019, 1 in 2020. So, yeah, 3 of the last 5. Crushed it. Numbers, right? That was exhausting.
I'm sorry. I you lost me when you started mentioning numbers.
I'm done for the day. I mean, it's just that was too many numbers in my world. So, let's not do any more of that.
Hey,
but don't ask me stuff like that again.
Well, this the game – look, man, the game was far from a masterpiece. I mean, obviously – that, you know, it was postponed basically 24 hours. You know, I mean, just a weird circumstance all around with the Patriots flying in day of. No Cam Newton because he tested positive over the weekend for COVID-19. You know, fortunately, outside of Jordan Te'amu, who it was also announced Saturday had tested positive, the Chiefs practice squad quarterback. So far, no other positive tests for the team. But how much do you think the delay and just the kind of the craziness of the weekend played into the fact that it was 6-3 so late into the game? And it was just kind of it just seemed like it was a real sluggish affair for both sides.
Yeah. You could tell both sides that they weren't in their Monday best in terms of performance or what they were executing out there. It was a rough go for both teams. And yeah, like you said, I mean, the Chiefs, they looked offensively, they looked really sluggish. I mean, defensively, they had an outstanding performance collectively. I know people look at the numbers and say, well, they gave up this rush and they gave up this. I don't care. The defense played really, really well overall, and they kept the football team overall in the game whenever they picked everybody else up. So the defense did a phenomenal job. For the Patriots, I thought they did really well in the first half, considering that they flew in that day. And they were going to fly out that night. I mean, that had to be a hectic day for the Patriots in general, just an exhausting day overall to where they never really got their bearings reset. So, I mean, a tip of the cap to them for hanging on as long as they did. But you could see them get worn out there late third quarter and that fourth quarter. You could tell they were exhausted from all the factors they had into it. And, you know, it would have been an interesting game, and I think it would have been a lot different football game if Cam Newton was playing in that game. I think they would have run for some serious yards, and I think the Chiefs would have been in a little bit more trouble against Cam Newton, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And look, this was another game where the offense seemed out of sync, but the defense kind of bailed them out. And to your point, you know, people look at the final stats and say, well, they gave up more than 5 yards a game on the ground. But if you take out that 141-yard run by Damian Harris, who just came back from IR, you know, the Chiefs actually did a fairly good job against the run, I thought. For most of the game, and then that one big run, you know, kind of later in the game skewed everything. But obviously, going against Brian Hoyer and Jared Stidham is a different challenge than Tom Brady in years past or Cam Newton would have been. So what do you take from this, the defense and the job that they did, considering that it was Hoyer and Stidham they were going against?
I'm not going to knock him on the quarterback like other people probably will or are going to, simply because there's been times where they would play a no-name quarterback or they would play Gardner Minshew in his first ever game and just get lit up by him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they had to go against whoever was there, and both quarterbacks had different issues that are the reason they are backups. Hoyer is he's not very aware of a lot of things in the second quarter when he didn't throw the ball away. He just kept waiting for somebody to get open against his own coverage, and it wasn't going to happen. So you got to throw the ball away. Buy some time.
He thought he had a timeout.
Yeah, as soon as he got sacked, he went over to the ref, and he's like, timeout, timeout. And the ref's like, you don't have one. And yeah. he's like, oh. And then you see McDaniel furious, and Belichick wasn't as furious as I thought, but I think that's because he already kind of knows what it's like when Cam's not starting. And then Stidham, the thing that kind of – irritated me about him, I put it on Twitter Monday night, is just like the way he hops to keep his timing. Certain quarterbacks do certain things to keep their timing and to keep their rhythm and to kind of mentally be like the internal clock in their head, but this is how that's how they kind of physically do it. And for him, he just hops. He's on his feet and he hops and he bounces and bounces and bounces. And so from a secondary perspective, if they're able to keep their eyes on him, they can tell what decision he's making because he stops hopping at that point and he's getting ready to throw it. Just like we talked about Jacoby Brissett, whenever he would pat the football, that's when he knew he'd made his decision. With Stidham, like when you see him stop hopping, that's when you're like, okay, he's getting ready to, it's one of those two right there in that area. And I think that's part of how Fenton was able to get that interception, because he was able to keep his eye on him and be able to undercut that route because he had enough time to track the football and did a good job with that. So, and that's the thing. Looking at that secondary, what they did with Snead being out and Bashaud Breeland, it just goes to show how good Dave Merritt and Sam Madison are as coaches for that secondary and how valuable those two are. I hope those two never leave and stay here for a long time, because the Chiefs haven't had to invest premium picks and stuff into the corners. They've been able to get phenomenal production out of guys that you wouldn't expect would have that kind of value. And they just that shows how good the coaching is for them, shows how great the coaching is on the D-line level. And then Spagnuolo is just a fantastic coordinator that does a good job mixing stuff up and keeping defenses on edge or offenses on edge.
Yeah, to your point, that was probably Rashad Fenton's best game as a pro. And I know he gave up the one touchdown on the pass from Stidham to N'Keal Harry in the end zone, but he actually had decent coverage even on that one. And look, in the NFL, you're going to get beat sometimes. Came back and made a big play later in the game to get that pick. He's a guy who we saw some struggles from Rashad Fenton in a couple games early in the season, but he's really just kind of steadily progressed. And anytime you've got Tyrann Mathieu back there in the secondary, I just continue to be impressed with him. But the other guy, I mean, you think about Taco Charlton stepping up and making big plays on a day when Chris Jones wasn't available because they decided to rest him with that groin injury and you know, not risk him, you know, being out longer term if he aggravates that. You know, it's easy to talk about Cam Jones or Cam Newton being out and the effect that had. But look, the Chiefs were without arguably their best player on defense, and Chris Jones, certainly one of the most disruptive defensive tackles in the NFL. And they were still able to put together a pretty good performance. I mean, you know, I don't care who's playing quarterback in the NFL. If you only give up 10 points, you've done something right. And obviously, look, the Chiefs got lucky. Patrick Mahomes, that was a fumble or an interception, really a fumble, I think, and probably a little bit of an early whistle. So bad break for the Patriots. And I know your heart really has to go out to the Patriots that, like, a call went against them for once, you know. So I'm very sorry to the fans in Boston that they had to deal with that today.
Yeah, I mean, it was a tough break. I mean, it was almost like a call from a Raiders playoff game.
Right. No, I mean, see, I would argue, and I did argue on Twitter, it looked like Patrick Mahomes tucked the football to me. But, hey, you know, what do I know?
So, hey, karma, man. It took like almost 20 years, but it came back around to them. No, I mean, look, I mean, the Chiefs got some breaks and they got lucky in some spots with some of the officiating. That's not, you can't dispute that or ignore it. But, I mean, that happens in any football game. And there's been a lot of times it's went the Patriots' way over the years. Been a lot of times it's went the Chiefs' opponents' ways over the years. You recognize it, but you just kind of, that's just the way the cookie crumbles on that one. So, yeah, I mean, hey, I mean, at the end of the day, the Chiefs got to win, and that's really all that matters. So, I mean, it wasn't pretty, no, not every game is going to be pretty, but, I mean, the fact that the Chiefs can win the way that they have, and here's the bigger thing. They played all three of the division winners from every other, you know, every other AFC division in their first four games. So they got to play, you know, they got to play three of the other playoff teams from last year, beat all of them in a comfortable manner, and then also
beat all three of them by at least 14 points. So,
right. So, I mean, they were able to do all that in a comfortable manner and kind of took on some of, minus Bill O'Brien's coaching, which they no longer have to worry about. They took on some of the best in the league, minus probably the the Bills and the Steelers, and we'll see what the Raiders have to offer. And they're probably playing a potential playoff team in the Chargers. So, I mean, the Chiefs got premium playoff caliber football that they had to play against for 4 weeks, and they're going to play a lot of, like we've said, they're going to play a lot of teams that are going to bring everything they got against the Chiefs because they are the Super Bowl champs. So the Chiefs, their adaption that they're having to make right now is having to rise to a new level each week to maintain the dominance that they're going to have, that people expect from them against maybe some opponents that on paper may not look like what you think they are.
All right. Hey, first team in NFL history to start at least 4-0 in four straight years. That's a huge credit to the players on this team and to Andy Reid. And we're going to talk more about Andy Reid and that Chiefs offense on the other side of the screen. Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined as always by Nick Jacobs. And Nick, the offense last night only scored 19 points. 20 if you, you know, if Harrison Butker stops being, you know, missing extra points and things like that. But that's not the kind of production you're accustomed to from this Chiefs offense. And this is twice in four games this season that the offense has just seemed out of sync. I mean, I thought the opening drive was great. Then they settled for a field goal. And I thought their second drive was pretty good. Settled for a field goal again. And then they went through two quarters where they really struggled. How much of that is Bill Belichick? And how much of that is cause for maybe a little bit of concern as the count, you know, as they move forward into the second quarter of the season here?
I think it can be all the above. And the reason I say that is because part of it is the fact that, like you said, what the Patriots are trying to do is the first thing you want to do is they want to take Travis Kelce away. So they would hit him at the line of scrimmage. They would bracket him. They would occasionally double team him. They would run him through multiple zones at each level. And they just mixed it up to take away Kelce. The next thing they want to do is they want to take away Tyreek Hill over top. So they'd have a corner on him for his short to intermediate routes. And then they would have a safety over top. So Mahomes never felt like he's going to have that wide open look to throw to him a handful of times. Then the other thing that they were doing is they were getting pressure with just three at times, sometimes two, occasionally four, and they were being effective with that, and they were dropping everybody else into zone coverages. And at times, the Patriots had seven DBs out there. So, I mean, the Patriots did a good job changing it up at times to kind of really aggressively go after the Chiefs and take away what Mahomes likes to throw route-wise. And there was the Chiefs had to run some of their crossers, and at times the Patriots took that away. The times Patriots were taking, they had somebody account for the flats pass, so Mahomes didn't feel comfortable with that. And for the most part, I mean, the Patriots, they just did a good job of mixing things up with a lot of two deep and blended in some 3D, you know, cover three with the three defenders taking away a third of the field each time. Bless your face is blessed. And then just all that combined, they wanted to force the Chiefs to run, but the Patriots were really smart in how they attacked the run because they would – at times they ran some run blitzes to kind of take away the cutback and the front side. And then most of the time they just relentlessly, wherever the strong side was, that was the rallying point for them to send all their linebackers to completely close that down. And then backside, their defensive linemen were just basically shucking the defenders. And they were defeating the blocks, and they were able to make the tackle at the line of scrimmage. So Patriots did a really good job in run defense, considering they didn't really have the numbers most of the time. They occasionally, you know, there's a lot of times they only had five or six defenders that kind of were there to stop the run, and they were able to effectively do it. So what the Chiefs had to do to counter is they started running those pop passes, the jet sweeps, the misdirection this way. We're going to go the other way with the counter and jets. And then they finally ran some tosses in the second half and were incredibly effective against it because they countered what the Patriots are doing. They're like, okay, if you're going to take everybody to this point of attack against the tight end, we're going to take everybody too, and we're going to see how it works out. And then the Chiefs started having success on the perimeter. So, I mean, that was kind of what they did to adjust and ended up winning the game. But what I really think when I watched the play calling and I saw a lot of the same stuff over and over and over again first, second, and third quarter when I rewatched the game. Andy didn't exactly put his best stuff out there against Bill. Bill put a lot more of what he would do against the Chiefs out there. So the Chiefs now know how to adjust, whether Belichick runs it or other NFL teams copy it and run it now. The Chiefs now can figure out answers to some of those things. And while the Chiefs, on the other hand, didn't give a lot of their answers to those things in that game specifically, so the Chiefs were willing to struggle in the battle to win the overall war of the season. So that's kind of what I took away from watching it.
Well, it really, I was watching Jeff Saturday on ESPN, who used to be a center for the Colts. He talked about this. This was really the Peyton Manning treatment that Patrick Mahomes and that offense got in terms of the way they were dropping and stuff like that. It actually reminded me a little bit of kind of an upscale version of what Houston tried to do with, you know, putting only five or six in the box at times. Problem was, when Houston did it, they couldn't execute that defense, and the Chiefs just gashed them, especially behind Asimile and Fisher, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire had 138 yards that game. This time, when the Chiefs would check out at the line of scrimmage when they only saw five or six in the box, and they would try to run in between the tackles, it was getting stuffed up. They were only getting 2 or 3 yards, which was a big difference, because obviously if the Chiefs are able to gash them in the middle like they had Houston, that game opens up immensely. But you know, to your point, I was really impressed with the Patriots' run defense. How many teams out there do you think really, though, can only put five or six in the box and are going to be able to stop the run the way the Patriots did versus how many teams are going to try to do that and will end up having more of a performance like Houston did in the open?
Well, I think part of it is obviously a Bill Belichick run football team definitely will be able to. I think the Ravens potentially could be able to if they want to try that down the road here.
The other team, the Steelers and Titans, I mean, because, you know, Vrabel is from the Belichick tree, and the Steelers have the horses up front that could do it too, I think.
Yeah, Steelers and Titans could, like you said. And then, obviously, I think the Bills, I'm going to have to watch a little more of them, but I think the Bills are another team that could be able to effectively attack that. So, I mean – and the Chargers, too. The Chargers are another team that I think could effectively do that as well. So, the Chiefs are going to have to find some answers. And Austin Ryder, Devin Wiley, they're going to have to – or Andrew Wiley.
Andrew Wiley.
Yeah, Andrew Wiley.
He played like Devin Wiley.
I remember that wide receiver for the Chiefs. I was a big fan of him coming out of Fresno State. But, Andrew Wiley and Ryder and then at times Mitchell Schwartz, I mean, they're going to have to – yeah, they're going to have to get – run blocking-wise, they're going to have to get a little bit more consistent collectively together to kind of not get defeated on their run blocks, because that was a really big problem in that game, is to where they didn't get their defender locked in, they didn't get them moved, and the defender was able to just disengage from them and make a tackle at the line. So, I mean, for Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I mean, I know people are starting to doubt him a little bit and his ability, but if guys are getting off the block as soon as you get to the line of scrimmage, it's really not much – there's not much you can do about it unless you're Jamaal Charles and you just, you know, use your speed, or you have Tyreek Hill ability and you can just juke defenders and accelerate immediately. It's just, it takes Clyde a little bit more to be able to do that type of stuff. So, I mean, yeah, run blocking wise, that's the key thing that's going to have to get fixed for this football team going forward to kind of be able to hit on all cylinders and get back to a potential generational offense like a lot of people were kind of hoping for and are somewhat discouraged they're not seeing yet.
Well, and I will say this. The Chiefs, one of the adjustments they did make as the game went along, they started doing a little bit more kind of pitch stuff to Edwards-Helaire late third, early fourth quarter, getting him to the edge a little bit quicker, getting him in space a little bit quicker, and that seemed to make a difference. He was a lot more effective in those situations running against the Patriots. So, I don't think there's any reason to panic. The Chiefs are still winning football games. There's room for growth with that offense, and I think we'll continue to see them grow. We're going to wrap this thing up here on the other side of this break with the C Block. So we'll be back here on 4th and 1. Welcome back to 4th and 1. I'm Todd Palmer, joined by Nick Jacobs. We are in the C block talking about the Chiefs. I don't think I gave the score earlier. The Chiefs 26-10 victory over the New England Patriots on Monday night, a game that was delayed 24 hours. And Nick, if there's any, I think we talked earlier about how the delay and the craziness and the extra tests that guys are having to go through this week probably had an impact on the state of mind and the preparation for the game, right? But the other way that it has an impact, the Chiefs have the Las Vegas Raiders coming to town this week, and then they have that Thursday night game against the Bills. So they're now going to have to play 3 games in 11 days instead of 3 games in 12, which doesn't sound like that big a deal. But if that extra day of rest, if you're an NFL player and you've got that schedule coming up, you're not wanting any extra days of rest taken away, are you?
No. I mean, the Chiefs had a physical game against the Ravens. They had a physical game against the Patriots. They're going to have another physical game against the Raiders, and then they're going to have to fly halfway across the country to get to Buffalo and play a very physical football team. So it's not going to be an ideal situation. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs are sluggish in that Bills game. It would not surprise me one bit. That's a game that they're going to have to mentally really battle through and really have to figure out a way to get themselves right physically with whatever they got to do in the training room so that their bodies can feel normal. And then after that, they get a nice little rest, which is going to be much needed at this point. So, I mean, yeah, you're just kind of hoping that you can get through these next 2 games and kind of be able to get back on an even keel. So, I mean, yeah, it reminds me, like whenever I predicted it, it reminds me so much of that 2014, whenever they played the Browns and the Seahawks back-to-back in 2 physical games, and they had to go out to Oakland and play them, who were winless at that point. And I believe that might have been Derek Carr's first game starting, and he ended up beating the Chiefs because they were very sluggish that night because they'd played 2 physical Sundays the weeks before, and they ended up losing that one and giving the Raiders their first win of the year with Derek Carr, I believe. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not an easy task the Chiefs are going through, but – I mean, if they can figure out a way to just get wins from the next 2 games, it'll all be worth it for them.
Yeah, and I mean, look, I think much like the Patriots, I think the Patriots needed the win on Monday a little bit more than the Chiefs, because they're now 2 games behind Buffalo in their own division. They're now 2 games behind the Chiefs, in that race for potentially, a bye. I mean, I'm sure the Patriots are still thinking about that number one seed. Haven't given up on that idea yet. And I think that's going to be the same with Las Vegas. I mean, they're already 2-2, having lost, to the Patriots a couple weeks ago, and sitting there, they're going to need, they're going to need this win on Sunday a little bit more than the Chiefs to keep pace. Otherwise, they're going to be 5 games into the season and already 3 back in the division race, which, and below 500, which is going to be, that's a pretty big hole to dig out of, even with the 7th team making the postseason. And like you said, the 3 games in 11 days is going to stink, but having that extra 3 days of rest before game 7 to kind of help reset is something that the Chiefs are going to welcome. I did want to ask too, I mean, how beneficial can it be that Rashad Breeland should be back, should get to mix in here? For a secondary that could use the boost with L'Jarius Sneed still out for a few more weeks, how much of an impact do you think Bashaud and his return can have for them?
Well, I think it can help a significant deal, because I did happen to see him Friday night at the Lincoln Prep football game. He was out there watching that team, and they had a very decisive win over Pembroke Hill. So if he can do that for Lincoln Prep when he's not playing in the game, I can only imagine what he would do if he's actually participating in it. It'll be a welcome addition to have him back there and kind of move Ward back to his more natural role and to move Fenton to back a more natural role like they did last year. You'd love to have Sneed out there, but it's kind of just the way that one is right now. So you kind of, with his injury. It'll hopefully feel a little bit more normal, but then also having Breeland and Ward there on the edges to help tackle and be physical, that's going to be huge. And one thing I will say, Thornhill had a really good game Monday night, and you slowly see week by week him getting back to who he was. It may take the entire season, but you see the progression week after week for him feeling more comfortable on that knee. Because I know, like I've said this before, I remember it taking Eric Berry an entire year after he came back from that ACL, and Steve Johnson cut block right into his knee, and he came back the next year, and it took almost the entire year for him to kind of get back to who he was. And for some guys, it takes that long. So, I mean, to see Thornhill slowly progress to being that explosive guy that he is, I mean, that's encouraging to see, and you hope it continues each week to where he kind of hits his normal stride again towards the end of the year when they will need it the most.
Right. And I mean, with him getting back to normal alongside, Tyrann Mathieu, and then you had Breland and Ward back in, you like what you've seen from Snead. We talked about Rashad Fenton having maybe his best game as a pro. That's a heck of a secondary moving forward. And, we talked about the benefit of playing a Thursday game maybe being realized the next week with that extra rest. A lot of times rookies, you get to week 14, 15, 16, you can start to feel run down. Maybe L'Jarius Sneed missing a couple games here in October will help keep him a little bit fresher toward the end of the season, a little bit fresher toward the postseason. So, again, if you're looking for a silver lining, maybe that's it with the L'Jarius Sneed injury. Maybe it helps him stay a little bit more focused there. Last thing for me, Bill O'Brien out in Houston, despite winning four division titles here recently. Sounds like it was more of a personality and a fit issue that finally came to a head. And obviously they're 0-4, but a lot of teams would be 0-4 given the schedule they've played. First of all, what do you make of the move? Second of all, how worried are you that Eric Bieniemy is going to be Deshaun Watson's next coach?
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised to see Bill O'Brien go. I kind of mentioned him a handful of times on Twitter the past couple of weeks when I was starting to hear about some of the, let's just call them problems down there. And then also I knew things were going to turn on when he traded Hopkins. I'm like, okay, you traded the number one wide receiver who Watson has a really good relationship with. That's not going to go well in the locker room. And that's really not going to go well in the locker room. Then when you kind of see the way
– or with the fan base.
Yeah, so. And then when you bring in Brandon Cooks, I mean, the reality with Cooks is there's a reason he's on his fourth NFL team now. Everybody thinks that, he can be this number one guy for him, and everybody keeps finding out that's not the case. And so that's why he's on his fourth NFL team, and a year or two he's probably going to be on his fifth NFL team. So it just – you downgraded there. Yes, you got David Johnson, who's a great running back, but you don't have a really good offensive line that can block for him, so that doesn't help Deshaun. And then defensively, it's just been slowly and steadily falling apart on that side of the ball over time. And when you traded Jadeveon Clowney for a bag of peanuts, I know they traded him for some players and stuff, but, and then you go out and you make the reckless move with Tunzel and with Stills, and you give up your future with the draft picks that you gave away. It was just a lot of reckless decisions that you knew were going to come back and bite him, and they weren't helping the football team get better. So he was a guy that he wanted so much power down there being GM. And then I knew yesterday whenever he's like, hey, I'm going to be calling the plays now too. I'm like, okay, you're going to be selling hot dogs in the stands to as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you seem like you want to take on every single role in the Texans organization. Are you going to do the PR for everybody to send out the press releases? I mean,
Do you think he did write his own Bill O'Brien's been released press release?
No, I don't think he did. I think he was done at that point doing that. But no, I mean, with Eric Bieniemy, look, I think I'm hoping Bieniemy has opportunities because, I've been blaring that horn for Eric Bieniemy for years and years. I think he's going to be a good head coach in the future. I think where he's underrated with the Chiefs is his ability to keep them sharp and accountable. I think that he constantly demands the best and the most of them. That's why ever since he kind of took over after Peterson and Nagy, I think you've seen some of the mistakes go down, some of the penalties go down, because I think Eric does a phenomenal job at helping keep those guys' minds and games and keeping everybody at the same accountability, no matter who they are or what their role is in the offense. And I think guys respect that and respond to that. So I think that's going to be something that wherever he goes is going to take with him. And I think that's something Chiefs offense is going to miss a little bit. And one of the coaches got to step up and kind of give that same accountability aspect to kind of take over that reins from Bieniemy. So, but I think there's going to be multiple opportunities out there for Eric Bieniemy. I'm selfishly hoping that he goes to Atlanta. That's kind of where I'm hoping, if that Falcons job becomes open and Dan Quinn finally moves on, because the message has clearly gotten tired down there. I'm curious to see if that's an opportunity. I know people keep bringing up the Jets. No, don't let Eric Bieniemy. No way. Don't go to the Jets. Don't go to a complete rebuild like that, because I don't think he's going to get the full 3 years and the time he deserves to completely rebuild that thing. And what I've said on Twitter, and I'll say here too, the general manager is the most important thing wherever Eric Bieniemy would potentially go as a head coach. The GM and him have to be able to work together. He's got to be able to trust the GM. And the GM has to understand what Eric Bieniemy wants in a football player and what he needs for that scheme to be executed correctly. So if Eric Bieniemy doesn't get that, then he's not going to have the best opportunity overall to have his vision fully realized. And that's what a big problem in the NFL is when a guy takes a head coaching job, is do they have a GM who actually can effectively recognize and do what they need him to? And how bad is the culture in that organization to begin with? And how much time do you have to fix that culture before the results start catching up with you that sometimes are out of your control?
Well, and I look, Houston's an attractive job because Deshaun Watson's there. So, he may not quite be on Patrick's level, certainly doesn't have the MVP or the Super Bowl championship yet, but he's one of the elite young quarterbacks, one of the emerging faces of this league. And so I can understand why a coach would want to go there, because the biggest piece that every franchise looks for is already in place.
And has an NFL experience.
Right. And look at, you don't have that with the Jets, because I don't think Sam Darnold's on that level. You don't have that with a lot of other, a lot of times jobs are open because you don't have that piece. And that's not the case in Houston. So it'd be a bummer if Bieniemy went there, but it could also make for some intriguing matchups down the road. But this week is Raiders week, and the Chiefs have won 10 of the last 11 games against the Raiders. It doesn't matter where they play, Oakland, Los Angeles, Las Vegas. Andy Reid has their number. We will talk more about that later in the week, but got to feel good that he's going to have the Raiders number again, right?
You hope so. You hope everything goes all right this week, and that they get to have everything go their way, and that they can get back to being 100% and to be able to play the football game at the normal time on Sunday and yeah. Go from there. But I know the Raiders have some issues with mask wearing, apparently. So we'll see how that goes for them this week.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, if I'm a Chiefs fan, I think the ideal week would be beating Denver and Las Vegas in the same week, but beating New England and Las Vegas in the same week would be pretty high up on the list too. So hopefully the Chiefs can pull off that double later in the week. And like I said, we'll preview that one. And then of course we'll dissect it when it's done. Until then, take care, kids.
All right. Time's yours.